This episode of The Girlfriend Bracket is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. With free shipping on orders of $100 or more, a 25% buy list bonus, and their ever-popular customer rewards program, CoolStuffInc is the store for all of your Magic the Gathering needs. Hey everybody, this is episode number 71 of The Girlfriend Bracket. My name is Erin.
I'm Hallie.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Chris.
New Chandra is amazing.
So amazing.
Can we just start the show with that?
Yes. I didn't see you.
We can wait until we can work ourselves into it. We can build up to it, or we can just, it just debuted like an hour ago.
Oh, I was eating dinner.
And it is. Oh yeah. Have you seen it, Chris? Okay. Can we tell you?
Sure.
I'm assuming we've already dug ourselves in the hole. Okay, so for those, if you are like Chris and you don't necessarily know what it does, we have Chandra, Torch of Defiance, two colorless and two red. She has four abilities, like a certain someone that we know. Starts off with four loyalty. Her plus one is exile the top card of your library. You may cast that card. If you don't, Chandra deals two damage to each opponent.
Sweet.
This is fine.
Oh, we're not even done. Hold on to your butts. Plus one, another plus one. Add two red to your mana pool.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
So like she ramps, she does damage, gets you a girl who can do both. She can do both. minus three, Chandra deals four damage to target creature.
All right.
Nothing to cry about. And then the minus seven, you get an emblem with whenever you cast a spell, this emblem deals five damage to target creature or player.
Casually.
No, yeah. Yep. Like, you can just cast crap. You can cast Gataxian Probes. You can cast Engulf the Shores and just five damage. Five damage. Five damage.
Man, it'd be sweet to just, like, go off a scape shift.
Yeah. You can. Oh, my God. This would be so good in your deck, Chris.
This is pretty cool.
Because you can ramp. You can pick things off. I mean, you can get to four mana. I mean, come on. Yeah.
I hope so.
Ain't no thing.
People are calling this like the next Jace. They're calling it the best red planeswalker ever. There's a lot of hype around this one. Star City Games is already pre-selling at $40 a pop. There's no way this card is bad. And we just figured we had to open the show by just being hype about it because it's amazing.
She is pretty good.
And the art's dope.
Yeah, the art is amazing. Magali Villanueva killing it. Christine killing it. From what I could see from the pictures, they had her coming out like a wrestler, like it was dark, and there were like fire graphics and a big Kaladesh screen, and she came out from beneath the screen and was looking badass, and just everything about it was just win, and Christine sold it really well. So speaking of cosplay, our woman of excellence this week is a young lady who goes by the name of Ariel. And Ariel is the woman who cosplayed Saheeli Rai this weekend. She was the cosplayer that they unveiled during the first panel when they started revealing things about Kaladesh. And I have to admit, I was a little nervous when I first saw the silhouette because they had the theater was in darkness and you could see a cosplayer. You could see a shadow. And I was a little concerned, and I don't mean any shade towards, you know, cosplayers like Christine and Air Bubbles, but I was really hoping that Saheeli would be a woman of color. And so when I first saw the silhouette, I was like, oh no, oh no, oh no. And then they revealed the light and she was beautiful and she was a woman of color and I was so stoked and it was Ariel. And apparently she's been doing cosplay for a while. She has a DeviantArt page. She's super talented. She's primarily a makeup artist from what I can gather, but she only has 200 followers on Twitter. What? And so she was killing it. And so I'm really happy to see her. And so if you want to support her, I know Christine's trying to get her to do some more cosplay. You can find her on Twitter at MakeupSirenCom. That's MakeupSirenCom. And you can find her on DeviantArt at MakeupSiren.DeviantArt.com. So we're just going to talk about PAX because that's mostly what happened this weekend. And Hallie, you were at PAX. So tell us all about it.
Sure. So I got to see a lot of the magic stuff at PAX because I was working for Wizards at PAX this year. I was working at the Learn to Play area with the rest of the Lady Planeswalker Society, and we were basically doing what we do at every convention, which is teaching people how to play magic. It was super fun. A slight change from previous years, we had these welcome decks, which had two 30-card decks in them. So normally if you go to a convention, you get a little box that has 30 cards, all of one color, and you get to just play with that deck. This year, Wizards decided to make two decks that you could either, you know, you could play one and give one to a friend, or you could combine them to make a 60-card deck. So I thought this was a pretty cool idea, because when we've taught in the past, the number one question people ask me after they walk away from the booth or as they're about to walk away is, can I have another deck so I can play with my friend or, like, with my brother or sister or something like that? So I thought it was really cool that, you know, we used it that way. So yeah, I taught a lot of people how to play. I taught a couple kids how to play. I posted a picture on Twitter of myself teaching a 5-year-old boy cosplaying as Star-Lord from Guardians of the Galaxy. He was adorable. I taught him how to play against his dad. So his dad was kind of helping a little bit. But the look on the boy's face when he cast Shivan Dragon for the first time was just priceless. He was so excited. And I taught a couple of little kids over the weekend, and they were all just, like, enraptured with the game. And just seeing them just made me wish that, like, I had been aware of Magic when I was that age, because I'm sure, you know, I would have loved it just as much as they did. So, yeah, I taught some kids, I taught some couples, I taught some families. I taught, you know, I taught a guy who hadn't played Magic since 1995, and he got right back in the swing of things within, like, 20 minutes of playing against me. And, it was a big success. We got a lot of compliments. We also got interviewed, by a couple sources. Brian David Marshall interviewed me for the Worlds coverage, the official Magic coverage. Maria from Magic the Amateuring interviewed me for a video that is now on Tulliyarn Community College. So you can check that out and see what we did over the weekend. And it was just super fun. It was, like, really rewarding to teach people how to play. I had a lot of fun teaching people how to play. I also got to meet a couple listeners, which was kind of cool. I met a listener named Aaron, who said he had met Katie at GP Portland. Mm-hmm. He was super excited. And I also, I was outside in, the street fair. Wizard set up this street fair, that had, like, make your own thopters and, like, blown glass and, like, apparently a giant elk that they were, like, parading through the streets. So I was just walking around there because I got, like, a lunch break. So I was like, okay, let's take a look at the street fair. And it was pretty awesome. And while I was out there, I was just, like, wandering around. And this guy came up to me and he was like, were you in the Community Super League? And I was like, yes, I was. I don't think I got his name, but he was pretty cool. He said he listened to Aaron's other show, Magic Mike's. So, yeah, it was really cool to meet people.
Well, that's fantastic. Your outfits were better, too.
Yeah, we were really happy with our outfits this year.
Yeah, like last year we had to wear these kind of stiff green button downs that had Battle for Zendikar on them. And you guys were in, dare I say, Indian influence. Like they kind of like, they were burgundy and I believe they wrapped, or there was a wrap portion.
Sort of. Yeah. They were these, burgundy, what they referred to as Kurta shirts. So they, okay. They were these like long tunics that buttoned up to the neck. And, they provided us with, like, some pashminas to wear and, like, some, you know, embellished jewelry. So I just kind of, you know, did what I usually do, which is, like, I just put on a scarf and put on a belt and put on a bracelet. And I was just kind of like, I don't know. I told people I was trying to keep up with the Kaladeshians.
That's pretty good.
I don't know.
I love it. I love it.
I don't know. Yeah. I was trying to look as Kaladeshian as I could. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. I think we were pretty happy with how everything went.
And while you were doing that, the original Lady Planeswalker was giving birth to her own little Planeswalker.
Yeah. So Tifa could not join us this weekend because, she's been pregnant for a while now. She was due on Sunday, not this past Sunday, but the Sunday before, I guess, like end of August. And, she was pretty set on having a natural birth. She had midwives and doulas attending her, and she was in labor for about 36 hours before she realized that she just couldn't give birth naturally. Like, she couldn't, like, her This is funny because the exact same thing happened to me when I was born. Happened to my mom, rather. Because apparently he was just kind of like stuck, and as much as she pushed, she couldn't get him out. So she ended up having to have a C-section, and Xander Dean Robles was born on Saturday night, weighing in at 9 pounds and 14 ounces.
Hello.
Which is a lot for, I don't know if, Katie and Chris, I don't know if you guys have met Tifa, but she is not much bigger than me. She is a small woman. And to push a baby like that out, I don't want to say it's impossible, but it's very difficult.
It's trying.
So, oh my God.
Yeah. But he's here. They're both fine. They're both happy. I haven't gotten to visit them yet. I'll probably be visiting them either sometime this week or next week, but, I'm super happy for Tifa. I know she and Mike have wanted a baby for a year or two now, and, I'm just so happy to see, you know, how happy they are.
Yeah, baby came out with a full head of hair. Mm-hmm. And just, you know, I remember, I mean, I've admired Tifa for a really long time, and I've admired her for reasons, you know, like her intelligence and her poise and her, you know, her skill and her grace. And I had never really thought of her in a, it's not that I didn't look at her as strong necessarily, but like this sort of really made me add that to the list. Yeah. Like, oh my God. Like, yeah. You know, and we forget that sometimes, you know, we forget that we spend so much time thinking about our bodies in very vain senses. Like, oh, I don't have a thigh gap and oh my, I don't see my clavicle and I don't do all these things. But when you really think about it, she spent 40 some hours bringing life. Like that little body of hers made a baby, grew a baby, number one, you know, kept the baby going. And then you just don't think of your body as being capable of such an awesome thing like that. Like, my body gives life. And I just had a new respect for her after that, and just a new respect for all of our bodies. Like, you know, for as much crap as we sometimes give ourselves, we forget that we're capable of really awesome things.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah, so I couldn't be happier for them. And you guys also did this really sweet picture congratulating them as well.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really great. Mm-hmm. So while you were there, you know, Kaladesh spoilers started. They unveiled a bunch of cards. We got to see some of the new mechanics. Vehicles are going to be a thing. People were really, really excited about this. We also got a new energy mechanic, which I'm still not really clear about. Do we know if there's like a chart? Like, I could have sworn, if I understand it correctly, there's a chart that tells you what you can spend all the energy on. Did anyone else catch that?
I'm not sure if that was like what you could spend energy on, but I think that was more like an internal measure of like how they wanted to scale and like how they wanted the power of energy to scale.
Okay.
I think I know like they have some like internal metrics where like, oh, we want this creature to be like bigger than a Welkin Tern or bigger than a something. Like they use a lot of like examples in R&D for, you know, what kind of effect that they want. Like, oh, we want this to be comparable to this thing that we have in the game already. So I think that's what that was. I don't think you can just spend energy on anything. I think there are specific cards that make energy and specific cards that let you spend it to do things.
Okay, because when I first saw it, I remember seeing a chart of some kind that had all of these things that were possible with different amounts of energy. And I was like, so is there going to be a little card, like a reference card that tells me what all these energy costs are? Like, it just seemed really confusing to me.
Yeah, and maybe you're understanding it correctly and I'm not sure. I don't know. Hopefully if that is the case, then we'd get that kind of reference.
Yeah, totally. So we have, they unveiled Saheeli Rai. She is in fact an Izzet Planeswalker. They also revealed today that Tezzeret is back on the plane. Tezzeret is the head judge of the Inventor's Fair. Hmm. So nothing good is going to come from that. he's the villain. Come on now. They also unveiled the, Fastlands, I believe they're called.
Mm-hmm.
So the enemy Fastlands. So, cards like Dark Slick Shores and Seachrome Coast, which are blue, white, and blue, black, we now have the enemy version. So we have Concealed Courtyard, which is black and white, Inspiring Vantage, red and white, blue and red for Spire Bluff Canal. And those are the lands that they enter the battlefield tapped unless you control two or fewer lands. And I think these lands are going to have a really big impact, specifically in the older formats. And I was watching the panel with some of the pros, and Reed Duke was mentioning that a lot of people tend to play Abzan because it has things like Black Cleave Cliffs. And whereas Abzan doesn't have a fast land, so that's a lot of the reasons why people don't play Abzan. But if these come into modern, that might make Abzan the better Jund deck. Mm-hmm. And there was also talk of possibly being good for Infect because it has the green and blue land. And so I see some really big Eternal applications for these cards.
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. We got to see a lot of cards this weekend. Were there any cards in particular that interested you guys?
Yes. I think that Saheeli's Artistry could be really awesome for Bluetron, because it can create a token that's a copy of an artifact, or you can create a token that's a copy of a target creature, except it's an artifact in addition to other types. So I thought that might be kind of fun. Why not copy a Mind Slaver? Might be cool. Might be a good idea. and then I thought it was interesting that I like that Morbid Curiosity allows like some black card draw. So I thought that that was cool. And like, maybe this is just me, but and forgive my bad pronunciation. But the Gyarapur Orrery, I don't know why, but the first thing that came to mind was like some anti like lantern control or bridge shenanigans. Because it costs 4, it's an artifact. Each player may play an additional land at each of his or her turns. Cool. But at the beginning of each player's upkeep, if that player has no cards in hand, they get to draw 3 cards. And so I was like, oh, that might be cool.
Yeah, because Lantern Control thrives on having no cards. And so if you make them draw 3 cards, the Ensnaring Bridge, it kind of cancels out the bridge.
Yep.
Is that what you were thinking? Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
No, I could be way off base, but like, that was like the first thing that I thought of. I'm like, oh, that'd be badass. Like, we gotta get around that shifty business. And then, of course, Inventor's Goggles. Like, not that I'm not excited for the set, but I was more hype once they kind of started, you know, doing all the new spoilers and everything. And I doubt that I'll buy a box this time around, but I'll probably pick up some singles. But I'm super hype about making another Artificer deck, and the goggles, they may just be a common, but I think that they look like really cool. I mean, you get to equip it, you know, for 2, and whenever an Artificer enters battlefield under control, you can attach the goggles essentially, you know, for free, and your equipped creature gets +1/+2, and I can't argue with that.
I love Saheeli. I love Saheeli so much. I'm actually really looking forward to putting her in my cube, because blue-red is sometimes a difficult color pair to build around, I guess. If you're designing a draft set, it's really hard to find a home for blue-red, because the colors are at odds with each other in a lot of ways. In our cube, blue-red is sort of has like an archetype sub-theme, and so I think Saheeli would slot right into that and make that deck really powerful. So I'm looking forward to including her in that. I don't know, other than, you know, I'm obviously excited about the lands. I play Infect in Modern, so I would love to play Botanical Sanctum. That seems really strong. We already talked about Chandra. I mean, I could talk more about Chandra. I could go on and on, but I don't know. I'm not usually an art person, but I actually really love the art from this set. I know some of the people on the creative panels have talked a lot about how bright this set is compared to other sets. And, you know, honestly, after how dreary, you know, Innistrad and Zendikar were, you know, the last 2 planes we visited, I'm actually ready for something bright and vibrant. So I really love the colors and a lot of the art for this set a lot.
I agree with that. Like, I feel like when I was looking through the cards that have been spoiled so far, I was like, I can actually tell kind of what this plane is supposed to look like and, you know, what it's representing. And I do love all of the bright colors. But I feel like I'm a little weird. And like, I was scrolling through the cards and I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. This is cool. And then I got to this uncommon and I'm like, oh yeah, that's sweet. it's really not that sweet though. It's just cool to me. Aerial Responder is 1 white for a 2/3 flying, vigilance, and lifelink. I was like so excited about this, which seems really kind of silly now that I look back on it. But I was like, I can't wait to draft like 18 of this guy and just be kicking butt with him. So I'm very excited for this one uncommon that'll be good in only draft and probably not constructed.
Katie, I had the same thought, so don't feel bad.
Okay. Somebody on Twitter gave it the name Vampire Whitehawk because it's like Vampire Nighthawk, but it's a white creature.
Yeah. Love it. Was I the only one that was scared about Inventor's Fair?
Because they you were hype for that.
I was terrified because I'm like, oh god, oh god, oh god, affinity. Oh god, oh god, oh god, affinity. I was like, please no, please no. You don't need anything else. Stop it.
Well, for affinity to have four mana though is a lot. Like,
yeah,
they can do two for like Arcbound Ravager. You know, if the game's going long, they can certainly get four. But I mean, I can't imagine affinity. Ideally, affinity wouldn't want to go that long.
Yeah, like two to three is the sweet spot.
Yeah, but if they had the means to go to four, it could be kind of scary.
Oh yeah, because they'd be like, "Ooh, did I not get a Ravager? Oh, that'd be kind of cool if I could."
Or Cranial Plating, mm-hmm. or whatever other artifact hate they might have. And I'm with you on that. Yeah. Yeah. I was actually a little disappointed with what I saw from the set so far. I remember I was watching some of the panels on Friday when I was at work, and I specifically caught the panel where they were talking about the new races, and that they were bringing back dwarves and how the elves were going to be featured here because they're not normally, you know, city elves kind of thing. You know, we think of them being very trees and nature, and these elves are very much into the sciences. And they mentioned the new race for black. They said that they weren't going to do zombies this time around and they wanted to give black something new. And so they made this race called the Etherborn. And the more I started watching this panel, I started seeing callbacks to Ashiok, who's one of my favorite planeswalkers ever. And the Etherborn have these blacks, these tendrils of smoke over their faces. The designers are very careful to use gender neutral pronouns, which usually means something is up. Normally they're very free with he and she and things like that, which is also a callback to Ashiok because Ashiok is famously agender. They mentioned that the Etherborn don't sleep, and Ashiok is known for sort of playing with dreams and nightmares. Who better to be intimate with that kind of thing than somebody who doesn't sleep? Ashiok is an Indian name. We're in an Indian-themed plane. There were just so many things that kind of stood out to me, and I was like, are we going to see Ashiok? Like, could we see Ashiok? I was so hype about that. And then they ended up dashing it by saying, no way, no how. Ashiok's not here. Ashiok is not an Etherborn, just poo-poo. And even if Ashiok wasn't on this plane, like, wasn't in this block, I was very disappointed that they had all these things that were so similar, and then just to say, nope, not an Etherborn. Nope. Don't know where they are either. And I was like, ugh. And I would have been very okay if they were like, yes, Ashiok is Etherborn, but you will not see Ashiok in this block. Like, okay, cool. But there were just too many things in common for it to be sort of dismissed like that. And that really kind of, that was really the one thing I was looking forward to out of this weekend. And, you know, maybe some things will come up in future weeks that will inspire me or tickle my fancy. But that was my big thing from this weekend. And it was dashed pretty early on.
Yeah. I once you posted that, I really got on board with it, actually. I was really excited for it. And I was talking to Adrienne Reynolds about it because she was also in town teaching at PAX. And she made a comment about how wonderful it would be if, like, Ashiok and Chandra were from the same plane, but, like, their storylines never crossed. And there was kind of this, like, will they meet or won't they kind of, like, long-term plan, I guess. And I don't know. That seemed pretty cool. I was on board with that.
Yeah. There was one card I found kind of interesting, Ceremonious Rejection. It costs one blue. It's an instant counter target colorless spell.
This is fun. You know.
Yep.
And we see this sometimes, you know, sometimes when a new set comes out, you see them print cards that are meant to kind of hose the set before it. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, Eldrazi have been dominating just about every format. And, you know, there were people that were like, thank you, God. because this can deal with an Ugin. If you're facing, you know, Tron, you can deal with Karn. You can deal with Grafdigger's Cages. You can deal with Thoughtknot Seers. You can deal with Reality Smashers. You can deal with Kozilek's Returns because it's technically colorless. There's just so many things that this kind of card could slip into, and the art's really cool, just the talk to the hand kind of thing. I don't know if you guys have, I know Katie, you've been trying to make more of an effort to read into the story, but did you read today's story and that Pia is not dead?
What?
No, but I did see her card.
Yeah, Pia's card is beautiful, by the way. Going back to the shout out to the art. Yeah, the magic story today confirmed that Kieran is dead. Kieran is currently the mosaic on a floor, I guess. There's like some art of him as like a tiled face. But Pia out. Pia apparently did not die. And if I understand the story correctly, she went into hiding, probably from Tezzera. Like, she's kind of in hiding. And I'm curious in what direction they're going to take her. Like, is she going to be vengeful? Like, does she want revenge for Kieran? Or is she going to be kind of chill? Like, I'm really anxious to see what they do with her. But yeah, Pia out. Pia has her own card. Pia Nalar, 2 and a red. She's a 2/2. When Pia enters the battlefield, create a 1/1 colorless Doppter, artifact creature token with flying, similar to her and Kieran. 1 and a red, target artifact creature gets +1/+0 until end of turn. 1 colorless sack and artifact, target creature can't block this turn. So, interesting to see if she sees play in Standard or EDH.
I hope so.
There were also some discussions regarding the set. You know, we talked about some of the panels, and there was one discussion in particular that really got people talking, and it sounded kind of innocuous until you really think about it. So, there was a Q&A session, and there was an individual who asked the panelists, asked the designers, what's going on with angels and demons? And specifically, for as long as we can remember, angels have always been women in Magic, and demons have always been men. And this person was asking that if, say, somebody should ascend, so let's say there's a man and the man ascends to become an angel, does he become a woman? Is there some sort of change there? And likewise, if a woman falls or descends and she becomes a demon, does she become a male? And it was a very well thought out question. And Jeremy Jarvis responded to the question like this. The reason that angels default to female in Magic is to move it away from real world religious representation. The default for demons being male is so you can cut them apart and blow them apart and not feel bad about it. They're just monsters that you chew through without guilt. And there were some dudes that didn't feel good about that. They were like, all right, cool. So you just kill us without guilt. That's not good. And there were some women that were like, well, we can be villains too. Like, you don't got to feel bad about defeating us. And, you know, Hallie, what did you think about this? Like, when you heard this, did you kind of pause a little bit?
I scratched my head a little bit, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. I guess I don't understand the logic, I guess. I do appreciate that, you know, they've sort of, I mean, the part of the response, you know, that had to do with angels, I completely understand that. I know that Wizards has been, conscious of, sort of separating a lot of their art from religious tropes, which I'm sure we'll get to in a little bit. Yeah, the bit about demons, I don't actually understand the train of thought there. And I think that, you know, I would like to see female demons. I think that's fine. I'm not super into demons myself, like as a creature type, but, you know, there are some Lady Black Mages out there who really enjoy playing demons, and I'm sure they would like to see themselves represented in that way. I don't know.
I would. There's one right here.
Yeah.
Katie and Chris, what'd you think about the comment?
I was just really like, what? On both ends? Like, I understand, like, perhaps this person does have this conversation with his friends or his play group, but I was just like, really? Like, I mean, I've had some very odd conversations with my friends, but it's never been like, you know, do you think in Magic this thing happens? So that was kind of like, that's odd. Then, I just don't know how that would... I would hope that your question would be pertinent to, like, what was going on, but I guess that's really neither here nor there. But it felt like Jeremy Jarvis just didn't know, and he just kind of gave, like, a BS answer, and it was just kind of... I don't know. I didn't get to see it live because I was on the phone with someone, like, when it was happening, so I had to watch it today, and I was like, it doesn't sound like you really know, and I just... And I just don't know why he said, you know, that response. But I think it was just coming from a place of he just had to, like, come up with something. Because I don't even think he knows. He's probably like, this dude wants to know why women are angels and men are demons. Like, this is kind of odd. And then the thing that tripped me up that he said in addition was that they kept it a certain way so that things were not quite so jarring. And I'm like, well, what's jarring? Like, what is, like, I want you to expand on that part. Like, what would be jarring about saying, oh, so this, you know, person that was on this plane, they ascended, they became an angel, and they were a man, and now they're a woman. Why is that a jarring thing? Like, I don't get it. So there was just a lot going on there that I just didn't really understand. But I would prefer if people just don't know an answer, just be like, it just is.
Yeah, I think that's an acceptable answer.
Yeah, it felt like to me that in this So maybe he didn't know the answer, and I think that it kind of did sound like that. But also, when you think about it, like, I feel like Wizards is walking a really fine line right now with how, you know, the culture of a lot of Magic players is becoming a lot more progressive and inclusive. And when somebody asks a question like this, it's kind of like, why are we enforcing that females are angels and men are demons? And then when he said the thing about, like, so you can just, like, rip them apart and destroy them and nobody will, you know, blink an eye, I feel like there are certain people in the community who might be upset if we get our first woman demon and then she's, like, brutally murdered or something. Maybe people will be like, oh, that's Wizards, you know, attacking feminism in the game of Magic or whatever it may be interpreted as. So I think it's kind of hard for them at this point in time to, like, are we progressive enough to move to that point where everybody would be okay with everybody really being equal in the game, you know? Especially when it comes to violence towards women, because they're trying to make it more inclusive. So I feel like if all of a sudden, you know, bad things are happening to all the female characters in Magic, that doesn't reflect well on Wizards. And while I don't think it's a really big deal if a man is an angel or not, I guess to me, I don't know, I don't see the downside in that. But, and he did say that there was, like, cards that have man angels in them, and I was like, I don't think I've ever seen one.
You're like, can you link me one of them, please?
I think there are a couple Boros angels whose gender isn't, like, immediately apparent.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, I buy that because I don't look at art super, super a lot, but I was just like, you know, I don't remember seeing any, so maybe I should go look into that. But I think that it's just a kind of weird time in both our culture and in the Wizards Magic culture of, you know, what's acceptable for them to do in terms of equality when, like, equally women and men being murdered brutally or whatever the card may depict might be a little upsetting to some people. I think that it's just a really weird fine line for them to try and walk. And I'm not sure that he quite knew how to answer the question because they are trying to be more progressive and inclusive. But this is obviously just an area where they have not delved into that realm yet.
Yeah, that's a fantastic point, Katie. You know, I read into this a couple ways. You know, the first time that I heard this, I felt like he was saying that demons are primarily cannon fodder and that they're just generally not really fleshed out characters. You know, Abnixilus certainly is, but I mean, he eventually became a planeswalker. You know, even Gristlebrand being a named demon didn't really advance the plot very much. You know, he was there to do one thing and he was killed in pretty much the same set that he debuted. And so I took it to mean that since demons in general aren't really fleshed out, they tend to be more just sort of speed bumps that the characters have to run over, you know, he really didn't feel the need to deviate from the real world in making them female. Like, that was the first way that I took it. But then I kind of agreed with Katie in that, you know, I, being a woman, I'm a black mage specifically. I would love to see a badass lady demon. You know, going back to Ashiok for a second, I remember when Theros Block first came out and I had heard rumors that Ashiok was originally supposed to be the big bad. Ashiok was supposed to be teaming up with Phoenix, and there was going to be this big nightmare thing where they were going to, like, take over the nightmares of people in Theros, and that sounded really awesome. But creative overturned it in favor of Xenagos, partially because, Ashiok being agender, a queer character, they didn't want their first, like, big, you know, agender character to be a villain, and that they were really weird about that. And, you know, especially as a trans woman, I would love to see a queer villain. You know, I think that women can be villains. I think that queer people can be villains. And I think if it's done well, you know, there's certainly no problem with it. And so, you know, I think that Katie brought up a really good point of the, you know, a sensitive time and trying to do it right. And I just hope that they can do it right, because I, you know, they mentioned the, well, we don't want you to feel bad for killing a lady demon. You can feel bad for killing me. Like, if we're playing World of Warcraft and we're PvPing, I'm still coming for your ass. Like, I don't expect you to take it easy on me. I don't expect you to feel bad for me. And, you know, I would like to think that we can get to a point where, you know, if we are going for equality, you should be willing to fight either one. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want you to take it easy because I'm a woman demon. I'm still going to kill you. And so it is a tricky thing. And I hope that eventually they can find that sweet spot of how to do it right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. There were also a lot of conversations regarding appropriation. There's a young man that we love on Twitter. His name is Siobhan Bhatt. I believe I said his name correctly. And he is Indian. He is Hindu. And he has been very excited about this set since it first came out. And keeping an open mind, you know, just to make sure that things are being done correctly and that his culture is not being appropriated. He was at PAX and he got to ask a question during the world building panel Q&A and basically ask them, you know, what about my culture did you take? Because it's very obvious that you're not doing Loxodon gods, you're not doing multi-handed women gods, you know, you're being respectful for the most part, but if this is an Indian inspired plane, what exactly did you get from my culture? And it felt like, you know, I understand there were some conversations that happened off camera, but it felt like on camera that designers weren't really prepared for it. I know that Siobhan got a lot of flack on social media and Reddit for it. You know, what did you guys think about this? Like how passionate he was, you know, did you understand where he was coming from?
Oh, yeah, I absolutely understood where he was coming from. I mean, I obviously can't relate to, you know, being a member of, you know, a non-Western culture, but when I guess I can, it is not hard to imagine that if you are a member of a non-Western culture and you've seen Western culture appropriate your culture for most of your life, you're going to be a little skittish when you see, you know, an IP that you love doing your culture, you know, as part of some product that it's putting out. Like, I completely understand the wariness that he has there, but I also completely understand the excitement he has. You know, as he said, you know, for 2/3 of his life, he's been playing Magic and he's always wanted to see people who look like him in the game. And I don't think that's, you know, I think that's great that he finally gets that opportunity. I saw that people gave him some flack for it. I don't agree with that. I mean, I think, you know, as we've said, Wizards has been walking a fine line with representation, and I think respectful criticism of that, especially from someone who is part of the culture being appropriated and part of you know, someone who is very familiar with that culture, a part of that culture, I think you have every right to, you know, be critical and be, I guess, hold Wizards accountable for, you know, portraying your culture in a positive way. So I think, I saw that he and Jeremy Jarvis had some conversations off camera and it seems like, you know, they were, you know, respectful and a lot of good things came out of that. And I'm really glad to see that, you know, they were receptive to what he had to say. You know, after he kind of slyly said, you know, I'm watching you guys, you know, the panelists were like, as you should, you know, you should be watching us. Like, we want to be held accountable. And I think that response made me very, very happy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, Wizards is trying to be as respectful as they can towards, you know, all cultures, all people. And I really do appreciate that he went up there and asked them, you know, something that is not maybe a popular question or something that was going to, you know, put him in a position where people are going to criticize him for asking, you know, hey, I just want to know, like, what did you take away from this? You know, thank you for not, you know, stereotyping or not doing these other things, because I can completely understand that. I remember Aaron asked me once, you know, did you see, you know, Book of Life? And I was like, I don't know, because I'm worried about how that's going to portray, you know, Mexican culture. And she's like, nope, it was great. It was respectful. And I watched it and I was pleasantly surprised. When you do see something where they're taking apart a part of your culture and maybe putting like a spin on it, but still being respectful, I can totally get behind that. And I've had that concern with a lot of things. I mean, there are some people that have a lot of feelings about people doing Halloween costumes that can borrow from cultural differences. And I'm one of those people that's like, I understand that, like, you like wearing the skull face makeup, but like, that's my culture right there. You know, Day of the Dead is a serious thing. And so I can completely understand wanting to be careful of making people in a certain community and culture feel like they are being misrepresented and wanting to also show them respect at the same time. So I do think that Wizards is in a situation where they need to be careful about how they do that. And I can't speak from his personal perspective, but I think that you know, they've done a good job from what I can see. And, you know, if there had been, like, many armed gods and, like, other things going on, I could see where, you know, someone might get upset about that and be like, well, this is something that should be taken seriously because this is something serious and important to me. But I want to see what more they show us from the set. Maybe they do have other things that were inspired by Indian culture, and that would be really wonderful to see.
Yeah, I feel like I was glad that he asked the question, but I wasn't sure exactly what he wanted wizards to say, because at one point it seemed like he was disappointed that they didn't take parts of his culture that maybe he felt they should have, and I could be misinterpreting it, but you know, he was like, what did you take from the culture? And I couldn't tell if it would have been better if they had taken more, or if it was better that it was a little abstract Indian culture. Because just from the way he stated the question, at one point it seemed like he was glad they did it the way they did, and then at another point it felt to me like he was like, well, what did you take if you didn't take any of this stuff that's all important? And so I was a little confused by his question, but I did feel like he had a lot to say, and I'm glad that he kind of had a public platform to say it, because I think it's important that somebody say it. And I'm a little disappointed that he's getting flack for it, because nobody should ever read Twitch chat, but there's a lot of people who are like, why is everything about blah, 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 and hurting people's feelings and blah, blah, blah? And it's like, well, it should be. When it's something that's delicate and needs to be dealt with delicately, you know, somebody should be worried about it. And I don't know, I feel like Wizards is doing their best. You know, they obviously don't want to mess it up. And I wonder how far that good faith goes, where we're like, we know you're trying, and maybe not being as nitpicky about some things is good, and maybe being nitpicky about some things is good. You know, I guess I'm not the one to say whether it's right or wrong, but I feel like at least kudos to Wizards that they're trying a lot, but I also feel like they're doing a pretty good job with what they're working with and making a whole world based on a culture without, you know, doing all of the token culture things.
I was reminded of what Chris said, you know, the other day when she was talking about talk about it, be about it. And, you know, when I hear things like this, it kind of worries me a little bit, because they're doing it or they're talking about it, but when they're questioned on it, they don't really have a reply. Mm-hmm. Where it's like, well, we're giving you diversity. And it's like, well, great. Can you elaborate on that? we gave you a trans planeswalker. What did you want? Like, they just Everything. Can't really, like, you know, right. It's like, you know, they're giving you like a surface thing, mm-hmm. but then when they're asked to delve into it, they really can't. You know, sometimes when you ask people questions about, you know, politics, or you ask questions about, you know, sometimes feminism, you'll be like, okay, well, can you expand on your position? And they're like, I voted for Bush. You know, well, how do you feel about the issues? I got a sticker. I voted. You're like, you know, they just can't really expand on why they feel the way they do. And so, you know, when I hear these kind of superficial answers or these distracting answers, I get a little worried, because on the one hand, they're really pushing diversity, but they can't necessarily tell you why they're pushing diversity. Mm-hmm. They can't necessarily tell you, you know, how they're doing it. You know, okay, so you're being very careful to say that this plane is not India. We're not going to India. But if it's going to be Indian themed, what exactly did you get from India? Well, who said it's not Indian theme? Why? You know, it comes across as like, why are you asking us these things? And isn't this enough? And it's like, well, if, you know, Chris said, if you're going to talk about it, we need you to be about it. Like, you need to understand. You need to not only say these things, but you need to understand why you're doing them. You need to understand why they mean so much to people. And it starts to feel almost like a party line, when there's no words behind the actions. And that's just something that worries me a little bit. But I did enjoy seeing Shivam on camera. He's always delightful. I like that he was sort of tongue in cheek, where, you know, he made a comedy. Goes, Chandra's not Desi. He was like, she has freckles, y'all. And I was like, oh my God, he was so funny. And then Jeremy Jarvis was starting, and he said something about, well, what our mantra has always been, and the whole crowd was like, oh. And then Siobhan was like, mantra, really? So he seemed to take it in stride too, which, you know, he doesn't necessarily have to, but, you know, I could see if he was just very stern and had glasses and wagged his finger, but he seemed like he was very interested and like he wasn't really gunning for them. And so I hope that he does get the answers he's looking for, and that he can find something in the set that he enjoys. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So also this past weekend was the World Championships. BBD won.
Yay.
He was playing Bant in all formats. Bant Humans was a standard deck, Bant Company. I think he was playing Bant Eldrazi in Modern as well. And he did end up beating Marcio Carrala. There was a lot of controversy surrounding Marcio because he has a record of, he's been DQ'd a couple of times, and some of the American pros made sure that he knew that they weren't really seeing it for him. And it was a little uncomfortable to watch this sort of back and forth, especially between Ben Stark and Marcio. You know, Hallie, what do you think about this? Like, do you think that people are right to sort of feel this way? Because it kept coming up in Twitch too, where it got to the point where the moderators were even just banning people for just cheat. Hornet Queen, because that was the card involved with one of his DQs. Mm-hmm. You know, were people right to keep bringing this up, or was this just a bad time?
Well, it's a weird situation just because I haven't been in their spot, so I just have to kind of assume, but like, I was trying to explain this to someone the other day. I think that, you know, in regard to like being in Twitch chat and talking about the game, have it be about the game. Like, I understand that people have feelings about things that have happened. You know, people tried to say that the whole Travis Wu thing was a big conspiracy at the GP, and like, you know, they're just like, oh, we can't talk about this, or this is going to happen. I was banning people like crazy. I'm just like, focus on the match. Just focus on the match. I'm not saying that, like, people don't, you know, agree with you that, oh, somebody said something they shouldn't have said. Oop, this was a bad thing to say. Or someone was a cheater. Or someone did something terrible. I don't think this is the place to talk about it. Like, have those conversations somewhere that isn't Twitch chat. And that's just my little piece about that. But the whole thing that went down between Marcio and Ben Stark, like, it was, like, literally, like, I was watching an episode of Drag Race. And they were just like, ch-ch-ch-ch. It was like shade everywhere, and I was like, oh my god. And I was just like, is this real? Like, is this happening? And I like that it didn't like get to the point that they're just like, let's have a street fight over it or something, although that would be kind of funny, a street fight over Magic the Gathering, but whatever. we've talked about people before on the show that, you know, they've done things they weren't proud of, or they were cheaters, or they did something. And, you know, I know people in my real life that, you know, have been that person at some point in time. And it's like, do you always focus on the negative thing they did, or do you give them a chance to be better? And I will say that, you know, in the conversation on Twitter regarding Marcio's previous behavior, you know, Tom Martell was very outspoken about seeing, like, if you are doing better, that's great. And I'm here for it. And I'm, you know, I'm proud of you. But there are things in your behavior that are saying that maybe you haven't. So I don't think anyone's necessarily like out to get him. That is kind of like a sticky situation all around. And I'm just kind of glad that I'm not a pro player that's like, what do you think about this situation? Be like, I don't know. He could be a great guy for all I know. But I don't know. Cheating's never cool. Just don't do it. It's kind of like drugs and smoking.
Well, you're pretty close to pro player status, and we'll talk about that soon. But, you know, Katie, what'd you think about that? You know, was this uncomfortable for you to watch?
So I actually was without internet for a lot of the weekend, so I feel like I missed this whole catfight, which I'll have to go read about. But just from, like, kind of an outside perspective, regardless of what he did in the past, and it, from what I read, it's been a decent amount of time ago. You know, it's not like it was like 6 months ago and he's straight off the bandwagon or anything. I feel like now was not a respectful time to bring anything up. Like, he's playing in a high level tournament. He's doing his best. From what we know, nothing shady has happened. And I feel like it was just kind of disrespectful for all this stuff to be going down while he's also trying to play cards. And if he is trying to reform, that's great. And I feel like it's even more disrespectful because he is trying to, you know, better himself and do better. I don't have all the facts about his first, you know, DQs or what happened, but it just seems like this was not the time or place to bring all of this up. And I'm kind of disappointed in the pro players about, you know, how they went about it, because it sounds like it wasn't done very respectfully.
Yeah, it definitely felt kind of and maybe this is a bad metaphor, but it kind of felt a little like All Lives Matter, how like people who feel a certain way about something tend to not bring it up unless you're talking about something else. So, you know, the time leading up to Worlds, why wasn't anyone talking about this? Right. Like, if we're going to Worlds, you know who's going. I could see if the criticism had started from like the jump, where like they announced the roster and people were like, oh, there's that two-time DQ or Marcio Cavallo. He shouldn't even be here. But to wait until he's made top eight, to wait until he's made top four, that's when I feel like the criticism really got vocal. Mm-hmm. And that's why I started to feel a little malicious to me, where it's like, you had all this time. Like, if you were truly concerned about him playing in this event and you were truly concerned about him not reforming and not up to no good, why are you waiting until now to bring it mm-hmm. up? Why are you choosing to handle it on Twitter of all things? Like, especially if you were at the event. I see nothing wrong with maybe finding like a time after the event. Cause I know these guys like to go out a little bit, you know, let's say you're all going out for drinks and you're like, you know what? I don't see it for your ass. I don't trust you. I don't like you. I don't none of that. That's a great time, but it just felt very messy where it's like, you're really doing this on Twitter, like for everybody to mm-hmm. see, like in front of your 9,000 followers. Like there are just ways you could have had that conversation. There are better times you could have had that conversation. And it really just came down to hashtag pros behaving badly, where it was like, there are just so many other ways that you could have handled this. And you wanted to fight like cats in a box. Mm-hmm. And it just didn't make sense to me, where it was like, why now? Why this? Why this way? And I just would have liked to have seen everybody be a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So Chris, you know, you are, we talked a little bit about how you are on your way to being a pro player because you top aided another PPTQ.
Shit. Woo!
I did. And it was an unexpected, impromptu, like PPTQ. I was like, I don't know what I want to do tomorrow. And then Ben was like, I'm going to go to this PPTQ, but only if you go. And I was like, all right, fine. We'll go together. And so we did. We went to a store that we had received a bathroom picture of like a year ago. And it was the one that had no toilet seat.
Oh, no.
Yep. So I was like, I was on like 10, like all the way there. I was like, oh, man, if they don't have this toilet seat, I'm going to be so mad and everything. I'm going to read them the riot act and be like, I just want to use the bathroom. So... But I was pleasantly surprised to see that not only did they have a toilet seat, but there was TP. And I was, I know, right? Although I had to wipe my hands with napkins, but whatever. Maybe that was all they had.
And, you know, let me, there's an air freshener. I'm looking at the picture. There's an air freshener. There is soap. There is toilet brushes. There is a garbage with pink garbage bags, which matches the pink soap. There are two signs, and the signs don't say if you have to crap here, do it elsewhere, like they did last time. They are written in nice, big, professional letters with professional wording. This restroom is here for your convenience. Please keep it clean. The floor is clean. Look at God.
Mm-hmm. And it's
we're
funny.
Making a difference.
Yeah. Well, and then the judge at the event, he even mentioned that they took down the crap sign, and he was like, that was good of them to do. I'm like, don't I know it. So
so if we stop recording tomorrow, we can look at this side by side and be like, we made
a difference.
We
won the toilet seat debate. This is wonderful. We got one, fam. So I was happy about that. I got to see some of the Madison crew that's been going to a lot of PPTQs I've been to lately and some other people that I like running into at events. So that was awesome. It was set up a little strangely because there was like... three different rooms, like small rooms that had tables. So it was kind of like the judge had to stand in the middle of the hallway to give his announcements. So it was a little wonky. But overall, it was a really awesome experience. The first round I had to play versus Green Red Tron. And I haven't played too much with Tron since I started on Valakut, so it's always an interesting experience. The first game, I got Nulamogged, which can be expected. The second game, I feel like I played like a boss. Like, I was just like so happy that I'm like, I gotta write down how I did this. And I just remember, like, I think it was, yeah, turn two, I was like, explore, got to play my extra land, and then I think I had like Call Me Hard Expedition, play a land, got a trigger, Farseek, two triggers, fetch, got three triggers, blew it, went and got Omen, and then Titan, and then I win? So it was just like, oh my god, I'm ramping my brains out, this is everything. So that was pretty awesome. I'm also trying like a new thing. I don't know if it really applies to my version so much as, you know, the RuneScape Shift version, but trying to float my mana before I let Scapeshift resolve, just in case, like, I need that for some reason. And then the third game, I just was Titan right into Scapeshift. And it was kind of a close game, but I was like, I got this, I got this, and I just blew him out of the water. And it was everything. Then the second round, I got to play against a really nice guy named Dustin, who goes to a lot of the PPTQs, and he was on Infect. He beat me the last time that we had to play together, and unbelievably, I swept him. I was like, how did I sweep Infect? I'm like, this is just crazy. And both times I was just able to scape shift. And it was just awesome. But I feel like I was careful about my plays. And, you know, he had me on edge at all times. I was like, well, we're at 7 Infect. This could be really, really bad. And somehow I got there. And it was really awesome. Then I went on to play Living End. Living End is a rough road sometimes for me, but I ended up beating him out of 3. I was able to scapeshift the first game and came back from 1 life. I was like, woohoo, we came back from 1. This is awesome. The second game, he was able to overwhelm me. And then the third game, I just was able to just blow him out. Like, I just was like, ran from my brains out, just got everything I could have needed. And it was just awesome. Then let's see. Oh, I went on to play a gentleman that was on burn. I just was able to shift into Titan. The first game, he blew me out the second game. And then the third game, I was able to cast a primal command. What? And I gained 7 life. And I was like, this is awesome. What you gonna do now? How many more burn spells you got in there? Probably not a lot, buddy. And so I ended up at 20 life at the end of the game and was able to just escape shift. And unfortunately, I feel bad. He only had 1 land, but Burn can make it on 1 land, so you can't ever trust him.
Oh, no. You don't feel bad for Burn. When they get 1 land, you enjoy that shit. You're like, yeah.
But they can sometimes still get you. I mean, they might not need the Boros charm, but it's nice if it comes up. And then the last round, we were basically just playing to see who would get first seed. And my opponent's like, I really like to play it out because I don't want to go second. I'm like, okay. So I played versus Jund. I just got decimated. He was definitely on points. So I lost to him. So I ended up going second seed. And I got paired against my friend Ben. And that was like a moment where we like hugged each other. We're like, no, we don't want to do this. And I was like, well, since I've been playing this deck, I have not lost to Burn at all. So I'm thinking my chances are pretty good. So the first game, I was able to go off escape shift. The second game, he burned me out. And then the third game, there was a moment where I had a Baloth on board. He skull cracked me, so I couldn't gain the life. I'm like, that's fine. I go to swing at him the next turn. He deflecting palms my Baloth and gets me to 1. And then after that, he's in top deck mode. So I was just like, I just got to pray that I can live another like turn or two, and I was able to go off escape shift, so I made it through.
Yay!
I was very nervous. I'm like, if I lose, this is fine, because then that means good things for Ben. If I win, good for me. Then the last game that I played of the tournament, I played versus a listener named Tim, who is super wonderful, and he was on Jund. I made a rather large mistake in the first game that I didn't see until it was pointed out to me later, where I could have gone off with, was it 5 lands and Prismatic Omen, and I could have hit him for like a billion with a bunch of Valakut triggers, but I didn't see it. And so he ended up sweeping me. But it was still just a wonderful game. He was super concerned about playing against my deck. I'm like, I don't know, like, Jund is kind of a back and forth thing. It's like, if you can disrupt my hand enough, if you, you know, have Grim Flayer on deck, I mean, that card is insane. I mean, I wish I was playing Jund just so I could play it, but but I mean, I got wrecked, but it was awesome, and I'm fortunate to be able to keep playing against these matchups so I can get better with them. But overall, it was really awesome experience. I was really happy to make top 8 again, and it's like, well, last time I got knocked out in the quarters, this time I got knocked down in the semis. You know, that can only mean that I'm just getting better, and I just hope that, you know, it happens again. You know, it's not that it's a bad, necessarily a bad feeling to lose, but I had been on a pretty kind of shitty track after the GP and feeling sad because I didn't make day two and then didn't do so well at the PPTQ the day before. But I guess I just really have to look at things as each situation is different. Each day is different. Just because you made top eight one day, just because you won a tournament one day, doesn't mean that's always going to happen. And just kind of ride on the high from the good things that you get out of the tournament, even if you didn't win, and mix that with when you do well, and look to those times when things aren't doing so well for you. So I just need to start implementing that a little more. But I'm really excited about improving, and I love my deck. I was really actually very excited when I saw that Oliver 2 and myself, our decks were almost the same. I'm like, woohoo! I think he needs a primal command in there, but I'm not going to tell him what to do.
He's going to tweet you like a week from now and be like, girl, the primal command is awesome. Like, he hears the show or someone tells him. It's bound to happen.
Such a good card.
You mentioned the feeling of, you know, that you were really hard on yourself because you didn't do well at the GP. And I kind of had the opposite problem. We went to a PPTQ the other day and I was still riding high from the GP. You know, I rolled into this PPTQ, like my shit didn't stink. And I was like, I got a pro point. I went 10-5. Suck it. Like, I just had this really weird attitude. And I assumed because I did really well at the GP, that I was going to naturally do well at this PPTQ. And I only finished 3-3 and I lost my cool. I tilted on someone. I was facing somebody playing Mardu control, and it was turn one Inquisition, turn two Inquisition, turn three Inquisition, Liliana. My hand was in tatters and I was just livid. I was like, are you fucking kidding me? I was like, are you serious right now? Like, you've stripped my hand of everything. I have nothing but land. I'm drawing land. This is horrible. And so, you know, I came from a GP where I had played all established decks, and part of playing modern right now is you might face some craziness because it's a very diverse metagame. And, you know, I'm facing Mardu control and I'm like, so is your deck just like 85 discard spells and some lingering souls? And he goes, pretty much. I'm like, oh my God. You're like, why can't you? Here's the kicker. The young man who was playing that Mardu control deck, he played Jund for ages. He would play Jund when it wasn't even good. So now that Jund is tier one, you would assume he'd play Jund. Oh no, he's playing Mardu control. And I was just like, why? Like, why? Why is this happening? And then that happened. I had to face Living End, which is actually really good for me. Last round of the day, I'm battered. I'm bruised. I'm over it. What do I face? Mono white Eldrazi Tron. Mm-mm. Main deck Ratchet Bombs.
Oh no.
All white Tron. Brings in Stony Silence with to go with the Ratchet Bombs. I'm just like, why? Like, where's the banned Eldrazi? Where's the burn? I did beat Chris's friend burn, but like, where's the affinity? Where's all the fun, you know, stable decks that I played at the GP? It was the polar opposite. And, I just was blindsided by all of these decks that I had never seen before and I didn't know what they were doing. And it just was so different than the GP experience that I was flustered and I lost my cool. And so I was a little upset with myself, and I probably, you know, in hindsight, I probably shouldn't have gone to the PPTQ because I still hadn't really recovered from the GP. I probably should have given myself some time before I do another competitive event because I was still tired from the GP. Like, I haven't even unpacked. My suitcase is still packed from the GP. Like, I haven't even unpacked yet. And you could even say that mentally I hadn't unpacked either. And so I probably shouldn't have even gone to the PPTQ. But, you know, 3-3 isn't bad. I certainly could have done better. I certainly could have behaved better. But, you know, I just was kind of the opposite. I was riding high and I paid for it. So I probably should have been a little bit more humble or just more grounded. And it just didn't really work for me. So
Ratchet Bomb was, and then I was going to say, Ratchet Bomb with Stony Silence is like wearing two mismatched shoes.
Well, that was like the guy, I think I might have mentioned this, but I was playing a blue-white control player on day two of the GP, and he was running two main deck Spellskite, which is fine. And then he brings in Stony Silence against me. And I was like, judge? And so I call the judge over, and I was like, does Spellskite work with Stony Silence? And the judge, you could tell the judge, I kind of had to hold in a snicker, and he was like, no, it doesn't. And I was just like, and so the opponent's like, yeah, I had a lot of dead cards against you. And I was like, now you've got two more. Like, you know, so I get really sidelined and people do crazy things like that. And it just kind of threw me for a loop. So, but I do love modern. I'm not saying that modern's crap or anything. I'm just saying that I went from being, it was just two very different environments and one I did really, really well at. And I should have, you know, kind of tailored my expectations to what I was actually going to.
I loved that kid that was just like wanting to wreck everyone with his like mono white prison deck. I've never seen someone like so small and so devious just be like, can you believe I have all these enchantments?
There was a little boy there named Alex. Him and his dad go there regularly, and I've watched Alex grow up. It's so weird to watch kids grow up when you go to your local game store enough, and, you know, Alex has literally grown up before my eyes. And so, you know, I look over, and he's got, like, main deck Ruined Halo, main deck Leyline of Sanctity, main deck Sphere of Safety, and it's just like, oh, my God. And, like, he just – he came to rain on everybody's parade, and he was having so much fun. He had Enduring Ideal, and it was just – main deck, mono white, all the enchantments. And I was like, I hope to God I don't face him. And Chris, tragic foreshadowing. So Chris and I were talking about it before the PPTQ even started. And Chris goes, I really hope I face him because I want to fracture and gust him. And sure enough, Chris ends up facing him. And I go over and Chris looks like she's in a bad spot. Like he's got all the enchantments out. And I'm like, oh no, oh no. And what does Chris play? Fracture and gust. And I was, and just the look on this little kid's face where he's like, oh. And he pauses, and I'm like, Chris. And then he scoops up all the enchantments, and I was like, you predicted this. You predicted that if you play him, you wanted to cast Fracturing Gust, and you did.
Sometimes dreams do come true.
But not for little Alex.
He's a poor Alex.
So anything else on our minds before we wrap up the show?
I have a couple things.
Okay.
So I wanted to let everyone know that I'm going to be at GP Louisville this coming weekend. I'm going to be doing coverage for Wizards, and it's team sealed, which is my favorite GP format. So Corbin Hostler and I are going to be interviewing players, interviewing teams. It's going to be super fun. We both love doing the human interest stories, which I imagine is why we were chosen for this assignment. I'm super stoked about it. I don't know. I'm just really excited. So if you're going to be at GP Louisville or if you're in Kentucky, I've never been to Kentucky before. but I'm really looking forward to it. So if you're there, come say hi to me. Also speaking of coverage folks, I also wanted to give a shout out to my colleague Mark Calderaro, who got married this past weekend. So mazel tov to him and his wife, Catherine.
Yay. Yeah. All right, so if anybody wants to get a hold of you, how can they find you and how can they reach you?
So I'm Hallie. You can find me on Twitter at HalCanSan. That's HalCanSan. You can find me on Snapchat at HalCanSan. I might be looking to do some more with my Instagram soon, so look for that. And like I just said, if you'll be at GP Louisville this weekend, come say hi to me.
And I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter at MeanMugger. That's MeanMugger. Or on Twitch, twitch.tv/MeanMuggerMTG. Or on Snapchat, although it's always of my dog, Katie.Neil14.
And I'm Chris. My Twitter is at THKRIZ. My Gmail is YOTEHKRIZ@gmail.com. My Snapchat is Cryptic Command, spelled all with K's. I'm getting better about sending snaps, but I just can't take a picture of all of my food. and I've been very sluggish about posting an update to my blog, which is backtablesmtg.wordpress.com. But I promise, this week it'll be there.
All right. And I'm Erin. You can find me on Twitter at OriginalAsterus. That's OriginalAsterus. You can email me at OriginalAsterus@gmail.com, Snapchat OriginalAsterus, Twitch at OriginalAsterus, Skype at OriginalAsterus. It's not very original, I know. The show comes out every Friday at GatheringMagic.com. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please leave us a review. Patreon.com/TheGirlfriendBracket if you'd like to support us financially. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.